Welcome to Equipped, a podcast by Connection Church. My name is Jordan Thigpen, and today I'm joined by Alex Cohen. We've got one last podcast with Alex Cohen. This is One for the Road.
Glad to be here.
Let's get equipped. Brother, what's up?
We're here. It's great. Life is busy. Yep. And as with all things, life is... there's always just such an adventure. I heard an old man once tell me that a man can be rich unless he has a car and a wife, and God help him if he has both, and I am experiencing that with my current car troubles.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
There's those old proverbs, man. You're like, that's almost true.
I feel like that was written by Ben Franklin
or
something.
It might have been.
So,
yeah.
Definitely not in your Bible. That is for sure.
Yes.
Well, this is something we've talked about for a few weeks. You said you kind of had some parting things that you wanted to share as you kind of move on to take some next steps for yourself and for your family. Yeah. Some things that you wanted to leave with our Connect Group leaders and our church family as a whole. And so I'm going to clear out and just be your conversation partner for this, but... if you are helping our church and our Connect Group leaders get equipped with some parting wisdom, what would you share?
Ooh, probably watch out for idols.
Watch out for idols, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit beforehand, and just to tee you up, you asked me, what is the first mention of idols in the Bible? And, mm-hmm. of course, my... first spot I went to was the golden calf exchange with Moses and the people of Israel at the base of Mount Sinai. And it says before that, I was thinking of Rachel with her stealing her father's idol as Jacob takes her back to his land. And you said it's before that. And I started thinking through a couple different, I was trying to go back and back and back and back, going back to Cain and Abel, and I was like, surely now we're in Genesis 4, like surely there's, you know, that's where we got to be. Mm-hmm. And you're like, nope, before that. So talk to us.
So the Hebrew word is selem, which I know sounds like a baby just had phlegm, but it's the same word that's often used throughout the Old Testament for an idol. Mm-hmm. However, in Genesis 1:26-27, it is used when it says, let us make man in our image, which is why in some Bible translations, idol is often like a graven image or a carven image or things like that, which is really interesting if you think about it. Like the idol of the golden calf, like the golden calf doesn't really do a whole lot, but it was the people would be thinking about whatever the golden calf represented.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are made to be God's idols, and like that's how God made humans to be, then the purpose of humanity was to represent the presence and authority of God.
Yeah, an external representative of a higher reality.
Yes, which is really interesting. So I was just in Acts 10, and Cornelius is, you know, Peter's showing up to Cornelius, and Cornelius bows down and worships him. And Peter's like, no, nope, I'm a man. Please get up.
Yeah.
Which is, if you think about it, Peter doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing. He is a representative of Jesus here, an idol, if you will, of Jesus, but he's not meant to receive worship, just to reflect him. The only one worthy of worship is Jesus. And so the challenge then is when we read throughout Scripture, we see lots of idols in the Old Testament, but idols aren't really mentioned in the New Testament a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think... my challenge in watch out for idols is I don't think idols have gone away. I just think they have become subtle, and we're very okay with it, unfortunately. And so how do we as leaders figure out if we ourselves are idolaters? And if we have accidentally placed something on the throne of our heart, that needs to come down. Because if we're to represent God well to our Connect Group leaders, to the people around us, there can be nothing before God. And so we need to make sure that we have our own idols knocked down so that we can show others, this is how the throne of your heart stays reserved for God alone.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm flipping through my concordance trying to see if I see any spot where idols or idolatry is mentioned in the New Testament. And there's some commands given in Acts 14, 1 Corinthians 10, some things regarding idolatry of believers should avoid. But anyway, there's not, but you're right. Like a lot of the weight of, it's interesting. I was listening to a podcast too recently about altars. Mm-hmm. Let altars sort of disappear more or less in the mm-hmm. New Testament.
Yeah.
You have Acts 17 with Athens, but you don't have like, you know, it just seems to shift.
Mm-hmm. And
idols being something that's kind of hand in glove with altars, but things being an idol.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. Keep talking us through some more of that.
So when we consider idols in general, why, and like let's think of in antiquity, you have, you know, an idol of a bull or an owl or some half man, half fish. We see that and we say, that looks ridiculous. Like for those who choose to go with the church and go to Turkey, you see some incredible idols, and some just have extremely exaggerated figures, especially for fertility idols.
Hmm.
But if we think about it, the whole point of an idol, what do we look to an idol for? They would go to an idol when they needed rain. They would go to an idol when there was a sickness. They would go to an idol when they were, you know, powerless, like anything regarding hope, purpose, comfort, power, control, you go to the idol. A few years ago, there was a Hindu gentleman, a former Hindu who converted to Christianity, and he came to Connection for a little bit. And he said Hinduism was really a fascinating religion. There's over 1,000 gods there, and they all have idols. But the way that it works in the village that he grew up with is you chose whatever god was going to bless what you were about to partake.
Mm.
You were about to eat a meal, you pray to the god of health. You are about to steal something, you pray to the god of speed. And you just justified whatever you were doing by praying to a god of, well, this honors that deity.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge with that, like truly, is if we were created to be an image of God and an idol of God to represent him, have we flipped it? How are we denying our purpose and saying, well, I'm now doing this to elevate me?
Yeah, that's super important. Like the real idol, then, what if I'm following what you're saying, we are the idol.
We can be.
We are, because it becomes self-worship, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about an inanimate object or some created thing. Paul talks about this, like they've exchanged the creator for the created.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, when anything that makes the flow of worship or who gets the benefit is us, then we are the idol.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in a worship podcast with the college ministry, but like worship, I listed three things that worship is not, but one of them, worship is not about me.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the flow of in relationship to an idol, if it's not flowing in the direction of the one true God, mm-hmm. then it is hitting a bottleneck and returning, and I'm making it about me. Mm-hmm. My benefit, how does this, like, even in that polytheistic setting of the Hindu gods, like, it's, I'm praying to the God of whatever and whatever because that's what is going to benefit this thing that's within mm-hmm. my effort.
Yeah, and on that worship note, there's so many individuals who don't worship because they don't feel like it, or they don't know the words, or they don't like the music style.
Yeah.
And like it's that difference between joy and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is so rooted in experience.
Yeah.
Happiness is rooted on, well, you got the good diagnosis. Oh, you had a good night's sleep. You enjoyed something pleasurable. Joy is not rooted in that.
Mm.
Joy is not rooted in circumstance. Joy is rooted in what is your, like, what is the power? What is your hope? And so when Paul writes, like, be joyful always, you can be joyful always without being happy.
Yeah,
like I can still have joy in the fact that I'm saved. I can have joy in the fact I have great community and friends,
right,
even when I'm told, well, your transmission's gone. And so
hypothetically.
Yeah. But like, that's the idea of like, I can still be joyful about the situation and see it, that this is an opportunity to grow in my trust of the Lord.
And that even using your specific situation and scenario, like, it is a fundamental belief that because I know the creator of all things, mm-hmm. and I understand through Christ, I've been adopted into his family. I don't know how it's going to get resolved. I don't know how he's going to meet me in this, but I'm not going to live as somebody who thinks that he never will.
Yes.
Right? And so I'm not going to create an idol out of my worry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to create an idol out of my circumstance and situation, mm-hmm. meaning I'm going to divert alternative, like, energy and concern and focus into that thing to say God is only good when I have a firm grasp of control on the outcome of all things.
You mean when you're on the God of your own circumstance and perfectly understand when everything's happening?
That's exactly right. So yeah. Paul says it this way in Galatians. He says, in the past, you didn't know God. You were enslaved to things that by nature are not God's. But now you know God, or rather have become known by God.
Mm-hmm.
How can you turn back again to the weak and bankrupt elemental forces? Do you want to be enslaved to them all over again? And so Paul uses this language. So there's kind of two concepts there, that like, allegiance flows one of two ways. Mm-hmm. It's either to the right source or the wrong source. If allegiance is flowing to Yahweh through Christ,
mm-hmm.
now that's true worship. That's true saving worship. Anything else is flowing in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
But the imagery that Paul uses is that of, what are you bonded to?
Mm.
I'm either enslaved to Christ or I'm enslaved to things that are not God.
Yeah.
So
I think that slave, like, that enslaved language is really important for our modern context. Like, we have a history within our culture,
mm-hmm.
Or our country, of slavery, and so we could get into that idea of, well, slavery looks like this. Mm-hmm. But if slavery were to be put in more modern times, like, think about how many hours your phone can take from you. Like, it is robbing you of time, energy, resources, relationships. It sounds like you're putting all of your attention to it, your focus to it. It's what you daydream about. That kind of sounds like an idol. Like, it's right. something that you are almost worshiping. Like, it mm-hmm. is, you're loving it with your heart, loving it with your mind, with your resources, your time. Like, it's terrifying when you put it in that perspective.
Yeah.
Now, don't smash your phone. Like, the challenge of that is God created things to be good.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is we elevate it as best.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's, I see it in myself. I don't have to point at anyone else other than myself of, like, when I get... So I had to do a hospital visit earlier today, and my source of comfort when I start feeling too sad, too upset, too overwhelmed, is I can open my phone mm-hmm. and I can let those emotions disappear into this little black mirror in my pocket,
mm.
right?
Yeah.
Versus casting my anxiety on the Lord because I know he cares for me. Mm-hmm. My phone doesn't care for me.
Yeah.
At worst, it is a device used by our enemy to destroy us, to harm us, because he's mm-hmm. anti-human. But at best, I'm coping with something that can't actually care for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's like, I dump emotion into it because mm-hmm. it's just easier, or I think it is, but not better.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, if I'm going to bed at night and I'm like, I just need a good laugh, I'd scroll Instagram Reels and get a chuckle, you know? And sometimes those things are not necessarily or inherently wrong, but it does become idolatry when you're diverting energy and intention into it that was reserved for Yahweh.
Yeah, there was a college student this last semester who phrased it really well of, he's struggling with, he can't seem to stop building his own digital kingdom. And it is forcing him to not participate in God's kingdom.
Yeah. You know, I felt the same way about real estate. I don't know how much I've ever really talked about this, but, like, we felt a very clear call from the Lord to, or at least he revealed that, like, when I wasn't working my job Sunday through Thursday, Friday and Saturday, I was either having to cut grass or do landscaping or go repair something at our rental. And for me, all of my like extra energy and attention that should have been given to ministry and the building of the kingdom was going to build my savings empire.
Mm.
My hope for what the end of my life was going to look like was banking on my ability to keep up with all of this now. And I wanted to do more than keep up. I kept wanting more and more and more and more. Mm. And I was, my worth was tied up in it. And the Lord was like, I need you. Like you don't need this. Mm-hmm. You need me. And I have something to use you for. I have things that I want to use you within my kingdom to build my glory. And I want you to give up your ability to understand mm-hmm. your retirement assets and just opt for something a lot more simple. And that's what we had to do. We had to simplify for the purposes of worship.
Mm. What's so interesting about that is I don't know that people watching you make those decisions would have assumed or could have even, like watching from the outside, have seen, man, they're wrestling with an idolatrous situation here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that you would have even known it necessarily in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But looking in hindsight, it's like, man, there was a little bit of the God of money here.
Yeah.
And like the worship, not just of how do I get more, 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 but I also don't want to spend. How do I let this grow?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So since that was such a subtle idol, what are some of the other idols that you could think about that would be a little more prevalent or also very subversive within our culture that as we're trying to walk our Connect Group leaders through, let's watch our idols.
Mm.
What are some of the ones that they probably are almost okay with or don't even realize is a problem yet?
Well, let's use one that Paul does address in the New Testament, which is food.
Mm-hmm.
1 Corinthians 8, about food offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge inflates with pride, but love builds up. If anyone thinks he knows anything, he does not, yet knows it as he ought to know it. But if anyone loves God, he is known by him. About eating food offered to idols, then we know, and then he goes on to explain that, but food being that, being a idol,
mm-hmm.
or for us, right? I think kind of in two ditches. One, we can be careless about how God has created us and mm-hmm. pretend like, well, just I'm born in the South, raised in the South. I just eat Southern things.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be the same for Northern. But
yeah, we love pizza and chicken wings up there.
Pizza and chicken wings. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't, right? But the food we eat has a direct effect on our health,
mm-hmm.
which affects who's going to have to care for us at the end of our life and how and what problems are they inheriting. Mm-hmm. And are, you know, like the time to start dieting is not when like the diagnosis is sitting mm-hmm. in front of you. And now we're just trying to stave off having a heart attack,
mm-hmm.
you know. But that's, I mean, that would be one. Like, I think people underplay, like, I don't know the right word. Sorry, like I said, I've been at the hospital today for, you know, Mr. Gary and Mr. Gary passed. And so my brain thoughts are kind of jumbled. But I think people minimize food as like a thing that they have a hard time changing and
yeah.
are kind of blind to, of like the cascading effects, you know, like the way food affects our stress hormones, the mm-hmm. way food affects our end of our, the way our lives kind of come to an end,
mm-hmm.
The kind of, you know, like something like 60-70% of our country is either pre-diabetic, type 1 diabetic, or type 2 diabetic. Mm-hmm. And that affects, you know, like you're talking about your family having to watch you lose your fingers and toes and ears and nose. And like over time, that's what your food choices are, you know, going to be a visual lesson in the future to your kids and grandkids, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's I think it is a dark, undiscussed corner of selfishness that, like, yeah, you're tired. You don't have the energy to disciple people. You don't have the mental capacity to learn, to read. You fall asleep as soon as you open a book. Like, you have no capacity for anyone investing in you. You don't have relational time because you're worn out and fatigued. You know, and there's other factors in there too. I mean, food is just one, but our career is another. But I'll switch the draft pick over to you. What's another one that comes to mind in your mind?
Well, I want to touch on food a little bit because that is so important in our culture. You're right. Like, it for many is self-gratification. Like, we reward ourselves with food. We run to food. We get angry without food. We believe that if the food at a party isn't the ones we like, that we've been wronged. And like, wow, what a waste of time.
Yeah.
We hoard food and then let food rot. And I think one of the challenges with that is that what Christ would do?
Right.
You know, it was really interesting just playing the tape through of if we never take care of our food choices at the end of our life, needing to be taken care of because we can't get around, because we let our weight get so significant it ruins our joints. But Christ took care of so many and guarded his body and made himself available. Like, Jesus pulled late nights and early mornings regularly in the service of people.
Yeah.
Are we really trying to imitate our Lord in that fashion, or are we taking his good creation and taking it greedily, where greed is defined as in excess?
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and even like if we're talking about idols, right? An idol is a representative of a higher reality. So the food idol, if we then, if we're talking about worship flowing to the right place or the wrong place, the way food becomes a worshipful thing is that we make it about us, where Jesus was frequently either going to or coming from a meal. He was constantly using meal time as a time of investment and discipleship and of as a part of his ministry, where food can turn into, like, I'm a foodie. I need this new experience. I'm going to spend money and for my own benefit and pleasure. And hey, if you're rolling in the dough and you can afford to do that and not and still be able to stay within the bounds of within moderation and wisdom, but like, you know, there are people in our church that I watch do this so well of leveraging seemingly every meal as a way to invest, a way to disciple. So there's a we're not talking about the positive sides of it, which is the redemptive, but which we see, you know, a lot of in our church. But yeah, the selfishness, right? Like, I think of in the South, there's the phrase of, I can't help it. I just can't help it.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
It's just they drop the L in help.
Oh, okay. Oh, I haven't been around long enough, I guess.
If you ever talk to David in Turkey, he does the same thing. He's from Oklahoma, right, and has that Southern sensibility, and like, I just can't help it. And wild. I can't tell you how many, like, family members I've heard say that of, like, oh, it's just the way that I am. It's just how I am. You know, I just can't help it. I just can't help who I am. I got to have, I mean, it's absurd stuff. Like, I got to have 3 scoops of ice cream before going to bed. I've got to have 2 bowls of cereal before going to bed, like after 3 meals already that day. Right. And none of them were a salad. But like, there's I can't help idol built around our preferences.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's interesting, especially with, what do you do when someone has a condition or they've been so trained that way from their parents and their childhood of, this is like a serious thing where you're just thinking of food all the time. You can, like, you want to snack and you feel compelled to, and it's especially with like a history and eating disorders. How do you navigate that? And that's a wonderful, wonderful question. But I think for the vast majority, we're not there.
Right.
And I think that's one of the challenges of this conversation is, like, there seems to be an exception to every rule, but we need to make sure that we know what that rule is before we start playing the exceptions.
Mm, that's good.
So
what's another idol?
I think power, man. I think whether it is success, achievement, money, control, I think we have this idea of how do I become, especially like reputation, how do I become untouchable? How am I future-proofing my existence? And we see that a lot with like the hustle culture in today's of, if I do this, I'll have enough passive income. If I do this, I have enough passive income. And it seems like the goal is, how do I just not do anything and still have my finger in everything? Or whether it's, how do I get that job or this job? And there's this incredible obsession with, I'm not content with where I am, and so I need to move forward, but not in a way that does anything outside of how do I make myself look better. Or I want to mention it just because we can, but people believe like their own political ideology is a source of power, right, and that the opposite is the enemy, right, as if the image of God can be your enemy.
Right.
But I think the temple of power is definitely an area where we view it as like an addiction. I'm just addicted to work instead of I'm actually worshiping it.
I think it's important too. Like that can be like a grandiose vision of ambition. And it can also be, I prefer the power of my little rather than venturing out into the unknown. Like, so Abraham is the example of the other one, right? Like Abraham is financially well off. They've got land. He has an inheritance. And he forfeits all of that to go on a journey with God. And in that, he becomes the father of a great nation. And so you could prefer the power over your little kingdom rather than forfeiting that in order to participate in God's kingdom. And it could be a double-wide trailer on an acre of land.
Yep.
And it can be a vehicle. Like, you can build an idol of no car payment, paid off house, paid off land, a job that gives you the freedom that you think that you deserve. Like, people can make an idol out of control. Like, power, if when you say power, meaning an ability to have like sovereignty over, we forfeit that in Christ. We forfeit our sovereignty and saying we cast our crowns at the feet of the one who's the name above every name. And so whatever his preferred vision of my life is, which is probably going to be, I heard a guy say this on a podcast recently, that like our idol or temptation is going to be the exact inverse frequency of our purpose.
Yeah.
And so like if my calling and purpose for me as a pastor teacher, like that being my, like my idol or temptation is going to be an ability to be self-sustaining and knowledgeable and not dependent because I am enough. Instead of being dependent, I can just depend on myself and my ability to communicate and explain. So my temptation is the exact inverse frequency of my purpose.
Yeah.
And so our idol is probably built around that, whatever that frequency communicates. And power can be a complete control over a little, or the constant pursuit of the most. And so both miss the boat of the cross.
I think I really appreciate that you brought the extremes there. I know someone who does a lot of rehab counseling in Texas, and Texas has massive programs for the homeless. Her biggest struggle right now is getting homeless individuals into an apartment.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to pay rent, they don't want to pay a car payment. And she has said the number one thing that she hears is, I'm not like in trouble, you are. Like, you're the slave to society. You have to work in order to afford your life. I don't.
Right.
And so, but it's that idea of control. Like, they so don't want to surrender control of their life to anything.
Yeah.
It is a form of self-idolatry.
Well, and another way of saying that, what you forfeit then, that is part and parcel with the gospel, is community.
Yes.
Like, so doomsday preppers, people that are like off the grid at all costers, right, that want to live completely untrackable lives, is you forfeit the ability to be an ambassador for Christ to the community that Christ saved you in.
Yeah.
And so that becomes an idol. Even if it's, again, if it's like living in a van down by the river, but it's yours and the government can't track you and you're completely off the grid, that can still be an idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you consider, kind of like we talked in the last one, of like, what is the purpose of man in the garden? To tend and keep it.
Right.
Not carve out your place. This is your fortress now.
Right.
But you are to extend the garden, extend the glory of
that's
God.
That's Babel.
And so if you're hoarding it, well, that's not extending it. And if you're avoiding all responsibility, well, you're not keeping it. That's how the serpent got it.
Right. Yeah. And the same is for the 1% of the 1%, right? That all my shores are, or sorry, all my bank accounts are offshore in the Cayman Islands or whatever. And like I build my life to be untouchable.
Yes.
Both are Tower of Babel living. So
yes. And I think within America, we struggle with just, it's very politicized and bipolar and all that. But at the end of the day, in Romans, it says honor the government.
Right.
And in Philippians, which was a Roman colony, Paul says, hey, I understand that you're in like one of the top places in the entire empire to live, but your citizenship is in heaven.
That's right.
So start living like it.
Right. That's good. I mean, that's a good word to us as Americans for sure, to not create a, I mean, there's another one is, and I, when you said that about your political party, is to me, that feels less about power as much as identity, which is another idol that I would throw out, is you can create a lane of identity that's Jesus plus identity, Jesus plus the Republican Party as an identity, Jesus plus the University of Georgia Bulldogs, the Georgia Southern University Eagles as an identity.
Right? Yeah, tailgating I have seen people as a lifestyle. Lose their religion at a tailgate, and it's like I as an elder of a church, you should not be doing such things.
Correct.
And it's amazing.
Or like country club, right? Like I am Jesus plus my golf membership, right? Or Jesus plus whatever, Dungeons and Dragons, like whatever the pitfall is, like create anything that is a Jesus plus anything identity ceases to be an identity bought and paid for at the cross.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting as you list those things, those all seem idealistic. Like, man, if I could only get that, then I'd be complete. If I could get that, I'd be complete. If I could achieve this, if I had this, then I would be enough.
Yeah.
Which means we're trying to solve our sin problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to solve our brokenness problem. The fact that we need that relationship with God. Like when Jesus says, like, the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and mind in Christ Jesus. Like that shalom, that peace, like all is right in the world. Mm-hmm. You are at right with God. God is at right with you. It's not a peace that we really think about in America. But that's the reality. And so it's like these idols are things that we're trying to say, well, if I had that, a little more rain, a little more property, a little more money, I'd be good enough.
Yeah.
When the cross says, you're not, that's why I had to die.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. I've been listening to that A Storm in the Desert podcast that we've been talking about, and or that you encouraged me to listen to, and I finally got around to it. And it was one of the things as we're talking about idolatry is when as it relates to identity, you know that being an American or living in America is an idol if God has no right to ever send you anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like your family matters more, your career matters more. The hope that you will have American grandkids matters more.
My vision, in other words, my vision of my future, I get to engineer it and it has to look a certain way. And God, you can operate with the parameters of that.
Yeah, and in Isaiah and in Jeremiah, it's really clear who is the clay that gets to tell the potter how they're to be made.
Mm. Yep.
And we're made of dust.
Or where does it go?
Yeah.
What shelf does it get to sit on? What does it get to adorn and decorate?
Yeah, I think I'd rather be a pot that's really well used and worn than one that's pristine but covered in dust and no one knows about it.
And the Bible paints it in even more stark terms, right? Like there are vessels that are used for dishonorable use.
Yeah.
And that dishonorable use is channeled for, it's when we channel idolatry through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hit one last idol. love.
Mm.
So this one is things like romance,
mm-hmm.
but let's also talk family and approval
mm.
as common idols. Because in previous ones, like we've talked about like the good of food and the bad of food and the extremes of food.
Mm-hmm.
And for power, we've talked the good of power, the bad of power, and the extremes of power. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk love.
Mm.
So fun thing is in English, we use the same word love for like pizza and wife. And so, which is unfortunate, but here it is. That's not how it was in other cultures. You know, in the Greek, you have agape love, which is the extreme love of God, never attributed to any human before Jesus.
Slow down. Say that again.
So you have agape love, mm-hmm. which is this extreme love. It was first attributed to a human for Jesus. The gods could agape, but only the first human ever attributed with agape was Jesus in the Gospels. And then in the epistles, not the wife of the apostles, but the letters that Paul and others write, so the epistles.
So in John 3:16, for God so loved, is that agape?
So God so agaped the world.
That he gave his one and only son.
Yes, it is this self-sacrificial love aimed at the well-being of another.
So is that 1 John, in this we know agape?
Agape.
That.
Yes. Mm. So then this thing that was off-limit to mortals, Paul says, love one another.
Mm. And that's agape?
And that's agape. When Jesus says, love one another, it is agape. Somehow.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
Through the Spirit, mortals are now able to do what was previously only described to the Greek gods.
As juxtaposed, agape as juxtaposed to the other two, mm-hmm. which are?
So you have philo. So like when philo should be like Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
Affection, familial affection.
It's like, man, we're best friends. This is great. This is the affection I have for a good friend, for brothers. It's very familial. And then you have eros, which is a more romantic, erotic love.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that kind of love, which is between spouses or lust. You have your phila, which is your familial love, which is for friends and family. And then you have agape, which is the love of gods.
So idolatry for the philos love or for the eros love.
Mm-hmm.
Give us examples of the phila. Well, how does idolatry manifest itself in philos love?
Honestly, selfishly. Mm. So for philos love, it's when I look at other people as objects for my utility.
Mm-hmm.
When that person, I never talk to them except, hey, I have a car problem. Or when I look at...
Which could be kids, right? Like towards our parents, like, hey, dad, pick up this bill.
Yep. Hey, I need this. Or you need a rental property. And suddenly you reach out to that friend 4 years and you have that really small talk, but really I need you to help me buy a house.
Mm. Like, I need you to co-sign on this side by side.
Yes. But like that's that person made in the image of God doesn't actually have any value to me outside of what they can do for me.
Right.
And like they're friendly enough and they're good company, but not enough I want them to.
Well, in other words, you're demanding of the philos to flow in my direction when philos never flows in their direction.
Yes.
The other one that came to mind is you will be at Thanksgiving, you will be at Christmas, it will be at my house, it will be inconvenient for you, and I want you to suck it up, and I don't care how you feel about it.
Yeah.
We're a family, we're the whatevers, and we meet at this day on this time at my house in my way, for my purposes, for my benefit, for my glory. And the latter, like, four sentences are never said.
Yes.
but
it's there.
It's the demand of the philos to flow in that person's direction with no return of the philos.
And for those on the other end, there's like a fear of, well, what's going to happen?
What's the retribution?
Am I going to face their wrath as if they're a god?
Right. They are an image representative of a higher authority. That higher authority becomes an idol because it's not Yahweh.
Yes.
Where, I mean, I've had to work through this in counseling for myself, too, of, like, Jesus says in Matthew 11, like, I didn't come to bring peace but a sword to separate mother from daughter, from son from father, from daughter-in-law to mother-in-law. And it's talking about in comparison, love in comparison, philos love compared to agape love, that I can surrender the overall agape love calling and purpose of Yahweh for a lower, lesser philos love out of fear of retribution of my family, which you can see a sense of, you know, fear of man on the one hand, but on the other hand, you can also see your own sort of selfishness and idol of self of like, well, how's this going to affect my inheritance?
Yeah.
How's this going to affect my standing in the family? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be approved of? So there can be some sideways philos energy in that.
I've run into college students who are only in school for a career they don't want.
Because mom and dad said so.
Yes. Mm. And they have completely altered the trajectory of their life for approval of family.
And it's crazy, man. God, it's so sad. Like, it's so, so sad when you think about that, that by the time they're 18 or 19, they've already surrendered.
Mm-hmm.
They've already passed on, could God call me to anything?
Yeah.
Could God communicate, which he already has in Christ, but through the Spirit, could he make a demand on my life? And then I think about how that ages of you work a job that you hate and you don't like, but mom and dad already paid for the degree.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're enslaved to guilt and the bondage to a degree program and a career that you don't and never wanted, but you still are fearful because of, you know, honor your mother and father. And maybe the scriptures are even weaponized in that situation. And I get that we're kind of talking in extremes, but I think it's a helpful...
Extremes help us figure out where the middle is.
Right.
And I think even if you aren't at this end or at this end, you might be somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we have to be really careful to check ourselves with it. But let's talk one last one that we may forget about. Approval. So that's still under that temple of love.
That's still philos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, but approval, let's put it towards things as well. Like, how many times do you think people, when they first get up, get dressed, stare at themselves in the mirror, do I look a certain way?
Mm.
Is someone going to say something? Hey, I really love this shirt because of how it looks on me, which is fine.
Or I know what somebody else is going to comment on it.
And I won't wear this because of what someone else is going to comment on it. Or I need to color code like this because I'm going to be with this crew. What's interesting is if we, again, idols, are you trying to be worshipped? Are you trying to direct the attention and affection of others towards yourself?
Yeah.
Are you eliciting worship?
Yeah.
Because if only God is to be worshipped, now I'm not saying you need to wear only black and white or burlap sacks, but what is your heart in that?
Right.
You know, if it is truly to make the image of God that you represent as beautiful as possible, so that when people look at you, they see the Creator, that's really different than, man, I hope I'm seen.
I'll give you two personal examples on that with approval. Like staring at the closet, I have multiple University of Georgia shirts and I have multiple Georgia Southern shirts. And we live in Statesboro, so our Georgia Southern is our university. I'm an alumni of Georgia Southern. I love Georgia Southern. But my dad graduated from University of Georgia. Like, I was born on second and live like I hit a double, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but a lot of that's because my dad went to UGA and I have a lot of appreciation and affection for that. But I know if I wear University of Georgia stuff around Georgia Southern students, I'm going to get disapproval, right? And I think about that almost on a daily basis of what's a Georgia Southern student going to say about me wearing a University of Georgia shirt, right? And the one or two times that I ventured out, I was like, well, we're not in the semester anymore. I'm going to be fine. And immediately, even on Instagram, comments of like, it was just very rarely, but sometimes like, oh, you're not true blue, you know? And and obviously it stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I already kind of in my heart, like, I want college students to like me because I want to be able to pastor them well. I want to be able to equip them and send them and do all that I feel like God has called our church to do. But it can get back to an approval, a need for their approval to not just like want to follow me as their pastor and leader, but to like me.
So when Paul writes, become all things to all people, that by some means some might get saved, like how do you navigate?
Sure.
How do you navigate that contextualization without without that idolatrous position?
Yeah.
But I think within that, that context is serve.
Mm-hmm.
Like love them, serve them. And I think one of the challenges that we have is how do I not let someone else's idolatry encourage me to my own?
Right. And I had another example of approval. Now I've drawn, left my mind. I can't remember what it was now. But yeah, like I just know it. I just know it in my heart when I'm like wearing something for the approval. Oh, I know what it was. So recently I've had an outpouring of people giving me clothes, which is a weird thing to say, but I typed it out and I sent it in a text message as a joke. But it revealed what was really in my heart, which is that somebody had given me a hand-me-down pair of boots that they didn't wear. And I said, here I am at 34, still wearing hand-me-downs.
Mm.
And it was like an ego check of like, I feel insecure and I don't approve of myself.
Mm.
I don't approve of my standing in life in that I kind of needed a new pair of boots. But the way the Lord provided it was a friend of mine gave me a pair of boots that he wasn't wearing in the first place. And they are probably the nicest pair of boots I've ever owned.
Mm.
But that's how he met me and provided them for me. But I wanted to approve of it myself by being able to spend the $225 on the pair of boots that I wanted to spend money on.
Mm.
And so that's how approval manifests itself in my life. And my biggest, like most base root sin is approval.
Mm.
And almost everything tracks back to, I want my parents to approve of me. I want to be the type of person that my parents and other loved ones would never leave.
Mm.
I could go through a laundry list of things, but like my most basic sin consistently comes back to approval. That's the idol.
Mm. You know, the other extreme that I think of in light of this is, and something that I personally struggle with, is I just don't care what other people think.
Yeah, that's the other one.
To the point of like, I am apathetic towards if I am going to hurt people,
yeah,
or I am unguarded with my words.
Mm-hmm.
And I can justify it with, well, if they are struggling with anger at me, like that's their sin,
right,
instead of the inner selfishness that I am very okay justifying with, but I'm not approval seeking.
Right.
Instead, what I'm actually doing is just making sure that I approve of myself.
Right. Right.
Which, if you think about Jesus and how he went through that, I'm not saying Jesus ever had to apologize, but he was super guarded with his words.
Mm.
And he was very intentional with them. Like, when you consider how he talked to the Pharisees, how he talked with the lay people, how he talked with those who were just disciples, each one got a very different tone.
Yeah.
And so I think Jesus was very careful, and he knew his audience.
Well, and I think too, like that side of things of just not caring is just a different type of veil for, I'm not willing to let anyone get close, right? I'm not willing to build relationships and open myself up and make room for a vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And so I live as if I just don't care and nobody can touch me kind of a thing. But Jesus knew from eternity past that he would be betrayed in his incarnation. Right?
And still invited Judas to hang around with him for 3 years.
And still loved him.
Yeah.
Cared for him. Invested in him.
Sent him out with the 72.
Provided for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like that is the other side of like of approval, is like completely shirking all relationship is its own form of pride and idolatry.
Yeah. So I've talked a lot about idols and some of the common ones, but
hold on. We got through Philos and we got through, we don't have Eros.
Oh, though. That's right. Eros. Man. So pleasure, I think, is one of the really challenging, like when we take Eros and we take that greedy pleasure, like I heard someone in high school say once, like love is for a lifetime, but lust is just 5 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And like that has forever stuck with me as such a horrible way to view relationships.
I had a friend one time that referred to viewing pornography as a victimless sin, like a victimless, what was the word?
I hope it didn't say pastime.
No, it's like a victimless, it's not crime, but just like within marriage, right? Saying that it's a victimless crime, like it's just something I enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's wrong on so many fronts.
Yeah. There's like a little bit of a rage, but just building at that idea of like
yeah,
the abuse and the trafficking and like, we need to have a sit down with this friend. We should find him. But yeah.
Like, well, he just went through a divorce, unfortunately.
Well, happens anyways. So
you're not moving on in a cold, heartless, doesn't care about how he feels kind of way,
just,
are you?
Nope. Just trying to get back to the issue with like pornography, with that manipulation of love into a selfish lust. Because that's really what it is. It is taking relationships and breaking them down into, you can do this for me.
Mm.
And it is for my pleasure, not yours. Yeah. And I don't care about your pleasure.
Yeah.
I don't care if there is anything good in it for you as long as I get what I want. Like, there are few things as dehumanizing as the weaponization of a Eros love.
Mm. Say that one more time. There's few things as dangerous as the weaponization of an Eros love.
Because it takes people made in the image of God and reduces them to objects.
Right. Which is what pornography does. It's a two-dimensional interaction with what was always meant to be deeply human.
Forgetting that whoever that is, like, that's someone's daughter.
Right.
That's someone's son. That's someone, especially in our digital age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, you just have to Google it. And the number of teachers who get fired, people who can't get jobs,
mm-hmm.
what's really terrifying, like, really terrifying in this light of AI, is the amount of child pornography that's being built off of Facebook pictures of children.
Yeah, I mean, AI can now scan, just if you take, you know, it gets real easy if it's like little bathing suit pictures of your 6-year-old, and the marketing, the money that's flowing in. I think if you go and listen to it, I can't remember the lady's name. I wish I could remember it off the top of my head, but Theo Von, comedian, and, you know, certainly not a Christian podcast, was talking to this lady that did that was the ultimate, like, Pornhub enemy. Like, mm-hmm. she's trying to expose the depth of Pornhub, and said if you lined up the videos and just watched them one after another that get uploaded to Pornhub in 1 year, it would take you something like 434 years to watch them consecutive. Like,
just, and that is one website among many.
It's an alarming amount of those that are children.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that have them uploaded, that they're of them, right? And they can't go to Pornhub and get their own videos taken down that were uploaded against their will. So it is much more, it's a victimization. It is a, it's assault, really. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a digital form of rape.
And as a culture, unfortunately, portions of our culture almost worships it. I mean, the mm-hmm. bill to, like, the Supreme Court had to make the ruling just this week that upheld Texas's ban of, maybe we do need age verification to watch this. Like, maybe we shouldn't allow this to children, because that is their introduction to relationships.
And so then, if you're going back to the idol of power, like, the gateway for that, whatever that idol of power, the gateway was Eros love,
mm-hmm.
which is just pure erotic, which that's Eros, erotic is the same root word there for us in English. Porneia, Paul talks about that. It's, again, root word mm-hmm. for pornography. And the flow of that is, I can make so much off of the marketing that happens through this, the paid website subscription, even off the free, the marketing that flows from that, I can make so much money off of that you don't know who the board of trustees is mm-hmm. of Pornhub. You don't know the parent company that has acquired Pornhub. You don't know who those people are. There's no person to prosecute. It is such a cabal of power that they have made themselves untouchable
mm-hmm.
and victimized millions upon billions of people. It's hard to really think about, and it is like no more than ever 10 seconds away.
Yeah, and like when you think of a temple, a place where you sit, you sacrifice, you worship, you commune. It is time, energy, resources, all your attention. It's not that different than bowing at the altar of pornography.
That's it.
And it ruins relationships.
Yeah,
because you are choosing to victimize someone made in the image of God.
And now all we've only talked about pornography. We've not talked about homosexuality, which is a self-definition of eros love, right? Yeah. My ability to define I receive relational affection through a same gender relationship rather than a designed heterosexual gendered relationship, and so on and so forth. Like, there's so many different things that are a degrading nature of God-defined, God-given love.
Yeah.
Whether eros or philos or now ultimately agape.
And even within marriages, eros can exist where it is the objectification or the abuse of one spouse or another for pleasure or avoiding it entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And spouses could just not be together because one is getting something either digitally or on the side or spitefully and choosing, you don't deserve my love, as if you must earn it.
And I'm just going to go ahead and go there because I don't feel like people talk about this, but it is something that this is in the idol of eros, right? Like within your marriage, guys not loving and pleasuring your wife and withholding that and just not caring, the apathy of that, that's one ditch of within. You can still be inside the marriage covenant, still be heterosexual, and still be creating a eros idol.
Yes. This is for me.
For me. Yes. I'm gonna get mine, regardless if you get yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's an idol. And on the other side, the coldness, right? The withholding of affection, the using sex as a negotiating tool within the marriage, you've created an eros idol.
Yes.
That I will give you some, honey, if 15 demands are met of talk to me this way, do things this way, pick up the kids here, do this home project. Like, don't make any mistakes or I'm going to withhold affection. Mm-hmm. That's an eros idol.
Yeah. And if Christ and the church is to be the model of marriage, I don't see Jesus withdrawing from the church at any point in Scripture.
Wow. Yep.
And so why would we, again, made in the image of God to represent him to each other and all of creation, so willfully neglect that?
So am I right in thinking and understanding eros and philos flow downhill from agape love then?
I don't see how they could not.
Right.
And I think truly, like, even the earliest peoples had to have a fond affection for one another. And part of that could have been just survival. I mean, I'm sure, like, Adam and Eve and their first kids were like, I guess we're here now. Do you want to go play in the mud? You know?
The thing, like, about Cain and Abel, right? Like, the philos love is corrupted because of a misunderstanding or really just sort of a misalignment with agape love, right?
Yes.
Like, Abel's sacrifice is accepted. His agape, in receiving the agape love of God, has corrupted philos love towards one another.
Yes, and then the brotherly love became competition for affection.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
It is interesting. But we can't just leave a bunch of idols and say, well, watch out for these.
Right.
Because that's not helpful.
Right.
So what do we do? Like, when you realize that you are bowing down to a different idol, like when it's something else has taken your affection, when you find your mind wandering, what do you do? Like, how do you even take that heart check? For me, like in 1 John 5:21, it talks about, dear children, keep yourself from idols. And so much of 1 John is just like the love of God and sitting in that and resting in it. And I think so much of that is we have to know the gospel, like not just intellectually, but like really recognize the gospel and worship the God of the gospel.
Yeah. So it seems like exactly rehearsing the gospel, like that comes to mind. And that's how Paul breaks out in song in 1 Corinthians 8 and addressing. So it's exactly your point. I'm addressing an idol. But let's talk about it. And he addresses this food offer to an idol, and in breaking that down and working that through, he breaks into song in verse 6. Yet for us there is one God, the Father. All things are from him, and we exist for him, and there is one Lord, Jesus Christ. All things are through him, and we exist through him. There's all the truth, and we exist under that eternal reality.
Yeah.
And so if I find the spine of my life is misaligned, I've got to get it back adjusted and aligned with the eternal perspective of the Creator.
Yeah. I think what's challenging is we often hear the gospel, or rather we hear it fragmented, or if you're like that one gentleman who told me the gospel is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's like, well, sir, those are called the gospels, but...
Russ is going to be upset that you said that.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Just kidding.
But it's so much more than that. Like, the gospel is ultimately a proclamation of victory.
Right.
Like, right. The king returned.
Yep.
The king came and he conquered.
Mm-hmm.
And sin is broken. And he didn't just leave people, but he rescued them from this kingdom of darkness. Yeah. So why would we go back?
Yep. I mean, that's what he addresses in Galatians, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Paul says, like, you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you,
yes.
right? And so bewitched, again, like a anti-God camp has persuaded you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like being bewitched.
Yes. And so worship, so much of that is we, like, how do we reorient our worship? Part of it is seeing where are we worshiping, like, where is your heart sitting?
Right.
When you make time to settle, where does your mind wander?
Mm.
What are you thinking about? Is it a Netflix series? Is it whatever? Like, where your mind is probably going to wander probably has a lot more time than it probably should if it's not a song. Like, if your soul isn't erupting with song, we're probably at a point of like, well, something has our affection. Mm. And you can look at how you spend your time, your money, your energy, your thought life. The stuff that you text, like the stuff you're afraid to let anyone else see, or you would rather just not do it or do it when no one else is around. Like, these are signs of, man, I have some skeletons in my closet that are probably idols I'm bowing to that I don't want anyone to see.
Thinking of in sort of a practical way, if you were to ask the question, going back to the question, I guess, that you asked, which is, what do you do if an idol is uncovered? I think my answer would be, it depends on how severe the injury is,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, some injuries, I need to be taken to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Extreme measures are needed.
Yes.
And I think of walking through this with, like there could be a situation where there is, like, so, for example, like, if you've struggled with pornography from childhood and it's crept into your marriage and it's crept into not just, so I mean, just that alone, right? Like, if you've had a lifelong battle with pornography, extreme measures are needed.
Mm-hmm.
There's some covenant eyes, which is an app which will monitor what's going on your phone. Mm-hmm. There's some accountability needed. There's probably some sex addiction counseling needed.
Because you can smash the phone, you can smash the laptop. The issue is you've so engraved it in your brain, like, the porn is inside you.
Yeah. And so that Romans 12, 1 and 2, right? Like, do not present your bodies as a living sacrifice, which is your true and honor. True, and I'm messing up the verse.
You're doing great.
Before, which I could get to Romans 12, 1 and 2 faster, so I'd stop butchering it. And here we are. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, I urge you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual worship.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next part, do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So that's what's happened with pornography is we've rotted our mind. We have burdened our mind with images and with Eros love that it's not capable of holding intention and that was never designed for. So we need our minds to be renewed so that you may discern what is the good, pleasing, and perfect will of God. And so, like, if that's the scale of the injury, then you need a hospital's worth of support and help, and nothing should be off the table to root that idol out of your life.
Mm.
But, like, if you've walked with the Lord for a long time and you've something's been discovered or something's been uprooted. Let's say something over the course of time, trying to use like a wise example, like over the course of time, it's been the Spirit of God has revealed to you that you have begun to, you've deleted social media. Like you've tried to stay in your disciplines, but you realize that you've slowly just started gravitating your affections towards and wishing and longing for more clothes, different possessions, mm-hmm. a different car, a different house, and just thinking that if I just had that, and you got just a low-grade fever of greed, you know, mm-hmm. a low-grade fever of covetousness, then the scriptures are clear. Confess and share. If you confess your sin one to another, there's healing in that.
Yeah.
There's restoration available in that. And so those are two sort of practical things. Again, painting the images of the extremes. But some of the mechanics are all the same. Mm-hmm. Confession of sin, repentance from sin, accountability, mm-hmm. existing in community. That's just rattling off four. What'd you have?
So some of the other ones would be things like fasting. It's really hard to have an idol of food when you are intentionally fasting from it to train your body. You don't actually need this.
Yeah.
And like for most of these physical idols, fasting does a great job with that.
Yeah.
For like heart idols, like you really want to find out where your mind is wandering, practice silence and solitude, where mm-hmm. you have to place yourself in that moment of what actually is going to float to the top here. Like
right.
my jar of river water from what we talked about earlier, like it's settled and this is what's sinking or floating. Like that's a problem.
Yeah.
And finally, like if you're really struggling with materialism, generosity, man.
Yeah.
Like Jesus makes it super clear. The generous eye, that's the healthy eye.
Mm.
It's the stingy eye. That's the one that makes the whole heart dark. Mm.
Maybe it was me and you talking, but there was another exact example. Like if it's greed and you turn around and be generous, like you could compare if very practically the fruits of the spirit, fruits of the flesh, go to Galatians and look at that of yeah. like, all right, I can see my fruit of the flesh. The spirit of God is revealing this to me. Then what is the fruit of the spirit
mm-hmm.
and how do I act on that? How do I press into that and see? Yes. So those are actionable, practical things.
I think we forget that Jesus, before he started his 3-year ministry, went into the desert, led by the Spirit, for 40 days fasting.
Yeah.
Like, he was either a carpenter or a stonemason. So Jesus was probably pretty jacked when he was baptized. And then...
Needing food.
Yes, starved.
Yeah.
For 40 days.
Yeah.
Then he was ready.
Then he was ready.
And I think one of the challenges is, okay, so... This has been super fun. It's been a great podcast. What do I do?
Uh-huh.
And so there is a book that I've used a lot in my own life to identify some of these idols. And they do a pretty good job of identifying it. But he just asks these questions. And so the book is called Gods at War by Kyle Idleman. And here are some of the main questions that he asks is, what do you worry about the most?
Mm.
What you worry about, that's what you can't control.
Mm.
There's an idol there. What are you disappointed by?
Mm.
Because if you're disappointed by it, then something's not to your standard.
Mm.
That's an idol. What do you make financial sacrifices for?
Mm.
I don't think we need to go into how that one's an idol. Whose approval matters most?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you going for God or people?
Mm.
And then what do you dream about when you have the most free time, or really any free time? Like, if you have your ideal world, your ideal, like, man, if only I had this, that's probably an idol. And there's so much scripture we can put into it, but really it's like this. Jesus doesn't want to share the throne of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. He's there to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does, everything in your life will fall into place. The challenge is that we're so busy shoving things on our heart that when he comes and he wants to work in us, he has to knock things over.
Mm.
And we feel like our life is falling apart, but that's just not true.
Mm.
He's slowly getting rid of the things that we think matter most.
Mm.
And he says, actually, it's this. It's me. Mm. The things that you are obsessing over, the things you're worrying about, man, just come to me.
Mm.
Like, we are, as humans, meant to represent God. God is not a hoarder. He already owns it all. And yeah. he gives so freely. He's not overly justified by punishing sin. Man, he died so sin could be satisfied and that mm-hmm. wrath could be taken away. Like, we're so good at rejecting our identity. Like, we're not just disobedience. Like, we have our created purpose to reflect God's likeness and rule. and we say, actually, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm who's to be worshipped, and God's creation is really good, but it's all for me.
Mm. Yeah. The picture I saw when you were saying that, he's got to knock things over to have the throne of our heart, is we have set up the tables of the money changers in the courtyard of the temple of our heart. And Jesus is having to come in and flip those tables over.
Yes.
And I guess my practical encouragement to our Connect Group leaders in our church is that let him flip them all over.
Yeah.
It's worth it. Whatever it is, let him knock over everything of how you think the temple is meant to be adorned and arranged, and let him do all the redecorating and define what the temple needs to look like.
Yeah. You look at Scripture and you see the flood, and God, that's God washing away sin from the world and starting over. And you look at the Exodus, and that is God purging his people. You look at the time in the wilderness for 40 years, more purging. People died there, and it was purging his lineage, purging his line. It was glorifying his name among the nations. You have the wars in Joshua. Again, purging, refining. It's like we have this divine surgeon and we're really upset he has to take a scalpel to us, but the reality is that we have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want him to work on us because it's painful.
I've heard you say before, using that cancer analogy, that like multiple things multiply in our body. Yeah. Use it. How do you say it again?
I don't know. That was too long ago.
That was last week. Things grow.
Yes.
Like, things grow in your body. But it alliterated. It was cancer and something. Anyway, I'm butchering it here at the end of the podcast.
I don't know. But there is an analogy I really do like about it. And that idea of like there's a son and a father.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're going for a walk, the son falls and cracks his head open. And the father rushes him to a hospital. And the doctor looks, and realistically, it's actually not that bad. There's just a lot of blood, but he needs staples.
Mm-hmm.
And staples are what's going to put the skin back together, minimal scarring. But without staples, there's going to be a really bad infection. He's going to die. The son, as he sits there, he gets that first staple. And then the screaming really starts.
Mm.
And he is begging his dad, please don't let him put in another.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one comes. And there's more screaming, more pain. Why are you not helping me? Make it stop. And the dad suffers with his son, knowing, man, this is the only way to be healed.
Mm.
And the reality is that we don't really want that kind of pain to be healed.
Mm.
We're too selfish.
Wow.
But Jesus went through that for us. And he went through a lot worse than staples.
The temporary pleasure of stopping the staples does not outweigh letting this doctor do his work.
Yeah.
That's good. Wow. Anything else, brother?
Don't be overwhelmed by all this.
Yeah.
I think one of the beautiful things that God does is in his sanctification is he reveals our sin a little at a time.
Mm.
I think if he really revealed how idolatrous we were, we'd melt. Like we could not handle like the cosmic treason we commit. And God in his faithfulness says, let's work here.
Yeah.
I think the challenge is as we start working on ourselves, we're going to want to work with others. We have to be really careful choosing what God wants to work on in that person.
Mm.
Like, there is a gentleman that I've worked with who's extremely flamboyant and a drug addict, and the Lord chose to get him sober first, then the drugs. We're still working on everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the Lord wanted first. Like, that was the sin that stopped. And to this day, and it's been years, he's still living that very flamboyant lifestyle, but he's sober.
Mm-hmm.
No drugs. And that's what the Lord has started to use, and he's asking good questions. Mm-hmm. And so the Lord wanted to heal his mind so that his heart could start to change.
Interesting.
I was hoping that he would just, you know, I have my favorite sin.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had pushed on that, I don't know that he ever would have gotten baptized.
Mm. Mm.
So partner with the physician.
Partner with the physician.
Don't dictate what he's supposed to do next.
My encouragement to our Connect Group leaders, too, is for sure, turn the eyes inward first. Think about yourself and not just the healing that someone else needs. But as you begin to apply this to other people, be patient with them as well.
Yeah.
Be patient with how the Lord changes people and brings healing. And make sure that it's about him make sure other people's healing is about them and not, or about God and not about your inconveniences, of the things that you wish were changed. And so,
yeah, ultimately the real tragedy of idolatry isn't just that we worship the wrong thing, it's that we forget that we were made to reflect the right one.
Yeah. Alex, thanks for this. Thanks for all your years of faithfulness and for all the time on the podcast. And that just is a tip of the iceberg of so many different things. And I'm going to miss these.
Likewise. Yeah. Likewise.
All right. We'll see y'all on the next episode.